picturing yourself as that main character and what a main character would do in that situation to get to that goal
mm-hmm.
is how we can relate world building to manifestation.
Welcome to the Fairy Ring podcast. This space is a portal into our curiosity where we take adventures through the universe via the mind's eye, have activating conversations with people who embrace the weird and creative side of life, and learn more about the universe inside of ourselves. So if you love mythology, spirituality, folklore, fantasy, sci-fi, art, mysticism, or in general just open to the strange and playful side of life, this is the podcast for you. I am your host and cosmic friend, Michelle Lark. On previous episodes of The Fairy Ring, I introduced myself as Michelle Watts, but I recently had a name change, so going forward, I will be Michelle Lark, which feels lovely. If you are new to the podcast, welcome. If you're returning, welcome, welcome. The interior curiosity segments of The Fairy Ring are more centered around having interviews, one-on-one conversations with people who are doing interesting things in our galaxy. And the episodes that are separated by chapter are kind of a meditative adventure that builds upon itself in each episode. You can find this season's cosmic narrative, chapters 1-4, available at www.enterthefairyring.com or Spotify, Apple, pretty much anywhere you can listen to a podcast episode. Today, we are entering our curiosity with fantasy fiction author A.G. Hauser of the Kingdom of Voices series. I'm very lucky that I get to know the author beyond her pen name as Amanda. She is such a dear friend of mine and is actually one of the reasons I got into tarot. But it's so cool to have seen her really own her creativity and having conversations when we were like in our early 20s about what dreams we had and then seeing her make those dreams come to life. It takes a certain amount of, you know, self-discipline and courage to alchemize your dreams into a physical manifestation and create this other world, via world building. And if you're not familiar with the term awesome, you get to learn something new today. So world building, as described by Merriam-Webster, is most often used to describe a component of fiction, much like plot or character. Unlike the word setting, world building emphasizes that the world being created is entirely new. For this reason, it's typically associated with fantasy and science fiction. It is also important to note that the 19th century world building described the imaginative realm of artists and poets. Today, it's most often used to describe the creation of an entirely new fictional world. So world building can bleed into like poetry and film and other art forms, but today we're going to be focusing within the genre of fantasy fiction. So if you've ever read Game of Thrones, Harry Potter, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, Dune, you already know what world building is. It's the universe, you know, the mythology, the laws, the climate, everything in the world that the characters can interact with. And A.G. Hauser did this so well with her universe in the Kingdom of Voice series, which is Natherin. Book 1 and Book 2 are out, Voice of Shadows and Voice of Darkness. Amanda has also written a coming-of-age story based in Oklahoma under the pen name Amanda Foote, but we're going to be focusing how she makes elements of magic believable in her world, how she uses world building even as a manifestation technique, and also talking about the underbelly of this kind of creative output, you know, the less glamorous side of like showing up and doing the work, but also finding a way to make it a magical experience, not just for the reader, but for the creative as well. So I know you'll really enjoy this episode. Before starting out, I asked Amanda to tell us her zodiac sign.
So I'm a Taurus Gemini cusp. For those who don't know, that just means that my birth date falls very close to the line of two signs.
Mm-hmm.
So technically speaking, I'm a Taurus.
Yeah.
But if you, I'm so close to the date of Gemini that I'm considered on the cusp. And that's really interesting for me because I, like when I read Taurus stuff, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty close. When I read Gemini stuff, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty close. But when I read stuff that's specifically for the cusp,
it's hits
way more. Yeah, it hits the nail on the head almost always.
Yeah, yeah.
I just say I'm a Taurus Gemini cusp because to me it's more.
I was going to ask you that, like, which one you feel like you align with most, but it seems like you feel kind of, like, equally.
I do kind of feel equally. I think I align more with Taurus because of some of the, like, main bullet points of being a Taurus.
It's an earth sign, so they're very grounded.
Very grounded.
And they're also very Venusian, so they're still going to enjoy, like, you know, like, food and pleasure.
Right,
and you know,
like,
beauty.
Very, like, loyal and relationships are really important to them.
Stubborn.
Kind of
too.
Stubborn, yes. Yeah. That all hits the nail on the head with me. So the big bullet points of Taurus hit me very well. But when you go into like the more minutiae of the two different and like combining them, more me.
What about Gemini do you feel like you resonate with?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like they're a little more airy. I guess a good way to describe me is that I have my feet on the ground, but my head in the clouds.
Love that.
And so I'm very grounded, but I also...
You're a dreamer.
I'm a dreamer. I'm very creative. And I'm both of those things.
What is your relationship with world building?
I think world building, it's not just the type you might think of when you hear that term. I think when most people hear the term world building, they think a whole, you know, new place being crafted by the creator of that world. Like,
yeah.
Like, they think like Lord of the Rings, like Middle Earth.
Yeah, and so there's also that difference between hard build worlding, like I guess hard world building and soft world building.
Right.
Hard world building is going to be like, Lord of the Rings, Star Wars.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. And then soft world building would be like Studio Ghibli.
Yeah, like it's, soft world building to me would be like setting someone in the real world, but you're building their world as they see it. Does mm-hmm. that make sense? Or the real world as that character sees it.
Yeah.
And so in order to make that feel real to the reader, you have to use realistic feelings and places and things to bring that world to life. Even though it's the real world, you'd think it'd be easy to like place yourself or a character in it. If it's just a person walking around in like an empty space, you know,
yeah,
there's nothing there. You still have to build that world around them. You have to make it visceral.
Right. Well, you have to, you're applying like religion and you're applying politics mm-hmm. and like all those things that we have here. You're giving it to that world too.
Right. World building to me, it's not just the world. It's also the relationships between people, the journeys that they take. It's, you know, it's
yeah.
more complex than that. But definitely Kingdom of Voices has taken a lot of work to build that world.
Can you tell us more about the world of like
yeah,
Nathrin?
Absolutely. So Nathrin is actually a country.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting. Nathrin is technically the world that it's set in, but Nathrin is also the name of the country that my characters reside in.
Mm-hmm.
So there are other countries in this world as well, but they all kind of fall under that umbrella of Nathrin. And then Nathrin was kind of like the first country.
So is Nathrin like the mother country of this world?
Kind of, yeah.
Okay,
yeah. That's a good way to say it. It was kind of the first country established in this world. And then you have other countries as well, but they're not as important to the story.
Yeah.
They will come in later as the characters kind of travel.
Well, I think it's good to just kind of get the sense that there is, the world goes farther than what we're
right.
seeing.
Yeah. Not any different than the real world we live in. Like, we're in America, but there are other countries
mm-hmm.
and people with complex lives.
Yeah.
Power struggles and things like that going on in other countries that may not be the main focus of the story, but they're still happening and they, in a roundabout way, probably affect what's happening.
Yeah.
In the main location.
How important is visualization when you are creating a fictional universe?
Is absolutely essential if you want really visceral, realistic worlds that readers can kind of picture themselves in. I feel like if you can't picture it yourself and describe it to someone, then how is your reader going to picture it?
Yeah.
For me, anyway, my process is definitely visualization. You know, every time I put my characters into a scene, I need to be able to see in my mind's eye what is around them. Because if I just say, oh, they were sitting down and talking and just have their conversation, then the reader they're just going to picture them in a white box.
Yeah.
You know, just sitting there talking. It's not going to feel real. So it's really important to pull in things like the crackle of the fire in front of them, or the sway of the leaves and the trees around them, kind of thing. So world building can literally be as simple as those types of things.
Capturing details we have in our everyday life.
Right, that maybe we don't notice, but they are happening in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to visualize those things to know that they're there, and for your reader to know that they're there.
Yeah, well, I think if you're adding these kind of, I guess, homey or nature aspects to things that we know, like, probably at least have an understanding of, like, what rustling leaves sound like or the crackle of a fire, and you're having those things inserted into the story you're reading, it kind of makes, like, the idea of dragons appearing, which, because dragons exist in your world, so do fairy creatures and all kinds of mythological, you know, lore that exists. But I feel like those kind of details, they help ground it and make that kind of the unbelievable believable.
Absolutely. That's a real thing. It's called suspending your disbelief. That what that describes is placing unrealistic items or scenarios into realistic settings because it allows you to suspend your disbelief. It allows you to pretend for a minute that those things are real because they're in a real setting.
Right.
How much research and preparation goes into creating a fictional world?
The world building that I do in books that I set in the real world, I'm more likely to have to do more research than I am for a world I'm just, like, making up. Because, you know, in a world that I make up, I'm making it up. Like, you know, like, obviously I need to, I'm the authority. I want to have, like, rules and things like that in place. But for the most part, it's whatever I want it to be. Whereas a book set in the real world, I sometimes have to do more research because, you know, maybe I have a character change a tire and I don't know how to change a tire. So if I want to write that realistically, I have to do that research and make sure I'm writing it appropriately. Research comes in more for world building in the real world, whereas sitting and just dreaming things up comes in.
Because rules don't really apply
until you make up the rules. However, that being said, one of the things I mentioned earlier, that suspend the disbelief, you still have to make the world feel real. So things that I've had to research in the past is, like, how fast can a horse travel? So, like, my characters are traveling by horse and I need them to get somewhere in a certain time frame, I don't know how fast a horse travels. We don't travel by horse these days. So I had to kind of research that aspect.
Can you explain to us the basic premise of Kingdom of Voices?
The basic premise of Kingdom of Voices, the series.
Yeah.
It follows three young women and all of the different ways that they deal with the sudden discovery of magic, the lack of magic, and the history of magic, and how those are affecting their current lives. So it follows three women, Jera, who just discovered that she has magic, Ariane, who has had magic for about a year or two, and she's learning how to control it. And then finally, it follows Carice, who is the princess of this kingdom, that has banished magic, and she is interested in magic and the history of magic, but her own rulership, her stepmother, the queen, has banished magic, has forbid magic, and has a lot to do with those three women and their relationship to magic, and then their relationship to the people in their lives as well, and the journey that they have to take
to discover how that magic relates to them.
Yeah, but magic comes in all different kinds of forms in this world. Like, you have...
A little bit, yeah.
Dragon magic, you
There's
have
like
fairy magic.
There's, like, a magic hierarchy.
Okay, what's the hierarchy of magic in your world?
So, for instance, the big plot point of Kingdom of Voices is that Jera, the girl who discovers that she has magic,
yeah,
she is of dragon lineage.
Yeah.
So she has dragon blood in her, and she is triggered one day. She ends up having to save her sister's life, and that triggers in her these ancient dormant powers. And turns out that she is what's called a voiced one. So she has a very special type of magic. It's very elemental, so she can kind of control the elements using this magic that she has. And she is about the third step down in the magical hierarchy. Mm-hmm. The top most powerful creatures are going to be dragons. They have the most powerful magic, the most limitless magic. And then down from them is elves, which have the next most limitless magic, but still has some limitations. And then comes the voiced ones, which are actually half dragon, half elf. And so they get kind of a combination of those two, but they have limitations from both as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then following them, you have magics like witches, mm-hmm. which are much more limited in what they can do. It has mm-hmm. a lot more to do with like use of herbs and like spell casting, like with words.
Mm-hmm.
And then, actually, a step above witches, I'm sorry, is, like, sorcerers and sorceresses.
Mm-hmm.
There's seems a lot more limitless, but as you follow into the story, you'll find that they actually have quite a few limitations.
Yeah.
And then below them, you have basically humans. Humans yeah. who don't really have magic, but they certainly try to. They use it, like... Kind of, like, try to use it like witches do and kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, use the herbs and
but
things
they,
like that. But
they accept the reality of it and their world that they,
right,
you know...
Right, they don't really have
yeah.
magic, yeah.
That would be such an interesting existence, trying to be, like, a human coexisting with these, like,
magical
hyper,
beings, for sure.
Yeah, magical elements.
Mm-hmm.
What about dragons draws you in so much of making that, like, your... pentacle character in this series?
I don't know. That's such a good question. I've always really liked dragons.
Yeah.
There's something so mystical and mythical about dragons.
This is an excerpt from Voice of Shadows by A.G. Hauser. Arianne heard it before she saw it. The horrifying rhythm of a gigantic chest rising and falling with each slumbering breath. Then her eyes adjusted to the light and focused on the breathing mass at the back of the room. A dragon. Though this was the very creature they sought, Arianne trembled at the sheer size of the beast. It could stomp them with its clawed foot like twigs. It stirred, its breathing becoming less regular now. It was waking up, and they were right in its line of sight. The monstrous creature shook itself awake, an eye as large as Arianne opening on its face amidst rough, pale, gray scales. Arianne imagined those scales were probably once a stunning crisp white, now worn and weathered by centuries of time. It shuffled to its feet, the entire cavern trembling with the motion, and shook out its body. A dark purple scar ran the length of one of its legs. Its terrifyingly large wings stretched out, filling the bulk of the cavernous room with ease. "You needn't be afraid," a deep voice echoed through the room. As the magnificent beast stood, a light flashed in front of them around the dragon. As it glowed, the fearsome dragon began to transform, slowly at first, and then all at once. When the light faded, a frail old man stood in its place. withered by Nathrin knew how many years. He ambled toward them with a limp, the scar still present on his leg in this form too. The old man wore a solemn smile on his face. "I'm so glad you are here, child," the old man said, his soft voice much less imposing when it didn't reverberate against the cavern walls. "You look so much like your mother did, Ariane." She narrowed her eyes as he came to a stop a few feet in front of them. "Do I know you?" she asked. He chuckled, but in a sad way. "I can't say that you do, but I know you, Ariane Ellis, child of Maya and Elam Ellis, grandchild of Vasima and Daranov, the great dragons of history." She looked at him skeptically. "Then who are you?" He clasped his hands in front of him. "I, child, am your grandfather, the great white dragon, Daranov." This has been an excerpt from Voice of Shadows by A.G. Hauser.
Because dragons are such a... They're not like fairies. I feel like fairies have a very distinct type of, like, personality and history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't vary fairy fairies. Very you can't vary fairies very much. But dragons, you can do so much with them. Like,
mm-hmm.
because they're a creature. They're not, you know, like humans, or fairies tend to be very humanoid, whereas dragons... It's a giant winged beast.
Yeah.
But if you can, like, bring into play, like, what if a dragon could transform into a human? Which is kind of what happens in Kingdom of Voices. That's
yeah.
how they mate with elves and create half elves, half
So half they dragons. Transform, you
yeah,
know?
They transform,
have transfiguration.
Which isn't, like, that doesn't happen in every rendition of dragons.
No, that's unique.
And they also, you can have different, like, magical powers when it comes to dragons. Some dragons in some stories have no powers at all other than breathing fire. They're just a creature.
Mm-hmm.
And then in some cases, like in my story, they do have magical powers.
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, you see some renditions of dragons where they're kind of more, they're very greedy, they like gold, versus mm-hmm. if you go to, like, more, I guess, Asian countries, you're going to mm-hmm. see, like, the water dragon is going to be more wise and spiritual.
Right, yeah.
But I feel like your dragon is probably something kind of in between that. Like, mm-hmm. there is, like, a level of, like, I guess the wealth that they're drawn to be more probably, like, magic. They seem
yeah.
more interested in magic versus, like, gold.
For sure.
But they also, there's a wisdom to them.
Yes,
they,
they're more magical. They, in my realm, dragons actually created magic. They created
yeah.
the world as it is.
They're a bit of like historians too, right?
Yeah, they're believed to be extinct, basically, but they're endangered.
Gotcha.
In my story, and they actually used to be the rulers, but, you know, as history has shown, the smaller
so
people
like,
try to take over.
Yeah, they're kind of like the children of the forest in Game of Thrones before humans took
yes.
over. But yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Is writing a spiritual process for you?
For me, I don't really find writing spiritual.
Mm-hmm.
For me, writing is, it can often feel like a chore, but
mm-hmm.
like a really rewarding chore.
Mm-hmm.
So I liken it kind of to, like, if you were having to take intensive care of a dear family member.
Okay.
On, like, a regular basis. You might not enjoy it right then while it's happening. You might not enjoy the journey, but the end result is priceless. It's worth it.
Right.
And that's, and I guess, like, spirituality is kind of like that for some people.
But for you, you're comparing it more to, like, an intensive care relationship. That's very
yeah.
interesting.
Yes, for sure. There are moments where I do sit down and I physically enjoy writing, but
mm-hmm.
for most of the time, it's a chore. I have to make myself.
It's an act of labor.
It's an act of labor, for
got it.
Sure.
Yeah.
But I enjoy the destination.
Yeah.
But maybe not so much the journey all the time.
Got it.
But like I said, for some people, that spirituality is like that.
Mm-hmm. You get in, you do hard work, and then you reap your just rewards.
Yeah. I just think people, we all have different relationships with our creativity.
Mm-hmm. And our spirituality.
And our spirituality, too. So it's just really interesting to see where they do intersect. If there's not a connection in spirituality, do you feel like there is a connection with the world in your book and then the world that you're living in? Do you feel like they sometimes intersect?
Sometimes. Most of the time the two worlds don't collide, but you can see some of me and some of the people that I love in the worlds that I build.
Mm, okay.
For instance, one of the main characters in Kingdom of Voices, Jera, she is a vegetarian because of her deep connection to living creatures. I'm a vegetarian myself for the same reason. That it wasn't just a character quirk that I was like, oh, I'm a vegetarian, so I want to make her a vegetarian.
Right.
It's actually true to her character. But it's still one of those little ways bits of me show through my work.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's other things, too. Like in one of my contemporary YA novels, I wrote a character that gets a scar on her chin from getting 14 stitches mm-hmm. in her chin as a kid. And that actually happened to my sister in real life.
Oh, wow.
So to me, that's what makes fictional stories feel so real, is the characters in them might be made up, but they were inspired by someone true and someone tangible and someone loved.
Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of truth, there's a bit of truth grounding these worlds for you and, like, real-life events.
For sure, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's very, very cool.
In a sense, you are the god or goddess of this world you've created. Do you think humans are a part of someone else's world-building? Could creating novels be us acting in the image of our creator?
That's so trippy.
Like a bit of an existential thing.
Existential crisis.
Yeah.
maybe a little bit, yeah. It's so interesting. The answer is so relative, too. Depending on someone's spiritual narrative, their belief in our world's origin story could be wildly different from another human being's. But that being said, I do believe that someone greater than us built this world for us, hoping that we would do as planned and take care of the world that they crafted. But much like the character's writer's birth from the hope and belief in their story, we tell our own tales and derail the character's origin or the creator's original version until it's not much more than a framework for a bigger and more beautiful journey.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I feel as far as like crafting my world for my characters. I'm like, this is the world you're in. This is what I want you to do. And they're like, nah.
Yeah.
I'm going to do what I want. And I'm like, fuck, okay.
At what point do your characters kind of take on a life of their own and start, like, inserting, I guess, their free will?
It's very interesting because sometimes, you know, the characters just do what they're told of thing. They are enjoying the journey that you're sending them on. But there mm-hmm. have definitely been times that I, you know, started writing a scene that had, like, maybe some dialogue in it or something, and all of a sudden a character was like, no, I want to say this.
Yeah.
I was like, but that's not what I planned. I don't care. I'm going to say it anyway.
That's so interesting. Like, what do you think that is? Like, what do you think's taking over and is just, like...
Probably in part kind of the creative muse.
Yeah.
You know, rearing their ugly head and being like, you know, you had a plan for this, but I'm going to do whatever the hell I want. But I do think that characters, they take on a life of their own.
Do you not think that's spiritual?
That definitely could be spiritual, for sure. An unseen force affecting...
Because I just think it's such a universal phenomena.
It is.
Between all writers of being like, the story... You know, took it over and it went this direction.
Right,
I wasn't expecting
itself.
It. And then, yeah, and this happened. And I understand, like, you know, there's that level of, like, there is that active labor of showing up and that commitment. If it's not always fun, it's kind of like, you know, going to the gym or going grocery shopping. But, you know, then you have, like, a lot of good food to cook or, you know, you feel healthy in your skin, like, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I get that there's a bit of, like, you have to work and then you get benefits. But once you hit this flow state,
mm-hmm.
you have this kind of, would you, like, possibly an other...
Yeah.
energy entering your world. and communicating.
Potentially, yeah. Something like that definitely happens. I've had, like, for instance, in Voice of Shadows book 2, there is a character that begins to, you're just kind of sense it in the book, like it's not, mm-hmm. it hasn't really come to life yet, but I began to feel it as I was writing.
Yeah.
There is a character that starts to grow feelings for another character that I never planned that whatsoever. But, you know, she's fucking badass. And
some attraction cannot be planned.
Right, exactly. Like, and even as I'm writing it, writing is so, it's such an interesting thing to do. It's hard to describe because you're, like, if you do, like, a scene plan and, you know, you write your beats or whatever, you know, mm-hmm. like, basically beat by beat what's going to happen in your scene. But you don't necessarily, you don't write word for word until you're sitting there actually writing it.
Yeah.
And in this particular scene, it was just a conversation between three people. And this aforementioned character that begins to grow feelings just kind of started, like, making comments and, like, kind of sideways looking at this person. I'm like, oh, wait. Oh, shit. Wait. Oh, wait. He's got a crush on her. Wait, when did this happen? I did not tell you could do that. And so that was, it was very interesting. And it
so one of your characters went off and caught feelings.
Yeah, he did. He caught feelings.
Before you caught it.
I absolutely.
That is so funny.
When it wasn't, you know, until I was halfway through the scene that I was like,
and then obviously,
what?
You know, did you have to, like, and you worked around that, you know, and just kind
yeah,
of capturing
Yeah, well,
that.
I mean, I went with it.
Yeah, but what else can you do?
Right. In my opinion, if your characters are telling you they want to do a certain thing, you just go with it. I mean,
yeah.
Obviously at some point you do have to still have structure in your story. And, like, if someone wants to murder someone else, maybe don't, like,
don't
and it doesn't apply to the story, maybe don't let that happen.
Right.
But I feel like it's going to create a really interesting dynamic later.
Well, and I feel like it's just, like, when you're...
it's realistic, too.
It's realistic for that unexpected to happen, you know, because the unexpected happens in real life, too. But I think it's just, like, I don't know, I find that really cute to be, like, wait, you have a crush on her?
Yeah, it was super unexpected.
Spicy.
Yes, yeah. But it also felt very natural. Like, it is something that, in this particular instance, the person that he was crushing on, she's very badass. She's really pretty.
Mm-hmm.
She came in and kind of, like, saved the day out of nowhere. And, you know, he's a little bit younger than her and a little timid. And so it was, in the real world, that's kind of natural that he'd be like, oh, she's really pretty. That's kind of cool.
I like
her.
Yeah.
But it wasn't something that I planned, but it felt very natural.
It felt really organic.
Yes, it felt very organic, even though it was something I hadn't intended to happen.
Exactly. Well, I mean, like, reading does help us to experience things outside of our own life view and to create empathy. I mean, that would make sense that would also happen. Like, we would create that same kind of empathy for our characters of being like, oh, this thing that I created, you know, it should be allowed that, at least some kind of that autonomy. Do you feel like you have, like, a natural respect and love for these creatures, not just as an extension of what you created, but as, like, kind of, like, they're something of their own essence?
Sure, yeah. I, without, you know, likening myself to the creator of the universe,
Well, it is your universe. You are,
right,
you
right.
are a creator of this universe.
And, you know, in some aspects of religion, it's believed that the creator did give us free will. They gave us
mm-hmm.
the option to make our own choices and forge our own paths.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it's any different than that. Maybe they're not, like, real living, breathing people, but inside our head they are.
Right.
Like, my characters take on a life of their own.
Reading helps us to experience and create empathy. Why do you think reading impacts us so intimately?
I think that reading is as close to magic as we mere humans can get.
I agree.
In my personal humble opinion. But I think you hit the nail on the head with your own question. Reading is such an intimate experience. In most cases, the story that we're reading, we are reading it to a close loved one, ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're reading in our heads, we're reading it to ourselves. And we get to the characters and we get connected to the characters and their stories
because I think that people are the most interesting part of any story.
Mm-hmm.
Then we internalize those stories, we analyze them, we melt into them until the story that we love and the person that we've shared it with ourselves so intensely have molded into one. And now that story and what it taught us are as much a part of us as the air sitting in our lungs.
So yeah.
I think that you hit the nail on the head with your question. You basically answered your own question in your question. It's just a very intimate experience.
Yeah, it is. Do you ever hit like roadblocks with world building or like, I mean, there has to be restrictions the way there is restrictions in this world in order to make it like believable, right? Like, I think you've even told me about this. Like, we've had conversations like beyond like this podcast episode of like, you mentioned something like it's almost more important to figure out what people can't do mm-hmm. in your fictional world versus what they can do. Can you go into more depth about that?
Absolutely. It is. It's, I think, more important to have limitations in world building than to like what. It's more important, like what you said, it's more important to know what your characters can't do than what your characters can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, you know, it's boring.
Right.
To just be able to do anything. You have to have limitations to make it interesting. Brandon Sanderson, who is a very popular fantasy author, along with many other teachers of the fine art of world building, has said before that no one wants to read about magic that can do anything. Click your heels and the bad dream is over. That's too easy. Snap your fingers and the villain vanishes from existence. Boring. But add limitations and suddenly it's interesting. Click your heels to stop the bad dream, but you have to first find the magic shoes that you have to be wearing to do so. Suddenly it's interesting.
Yeah.
What good is a magic to a story? What good is magic to a story if it just solves everyone's problems? You know what I mean? If the magic, if you just, you know, snap your fingers.
You have to have a problem in order to have a story in the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And if your magic just solves that problem, then boom, the story's over. There's no story.
Well, I think, like, that's, reading has given me maybe a better way of, like, accepting the world. Because it's not saying that the world is not without challenge. Like, we need that challenge to kind of flesh out our own personal story.
So, for me, the universal question that I ask myself in every scene is, how can I make this worse for my character? This is an excerpt from Voice of Shadows by A.G. Hauser. The wind wrestled with the trees, tearing black leaves from the branches like a child plucking the petals of a flower. Ariane rested her hands on either side of her, and the ground rumbled again, though Carice wasn't sure if it was Ariane's doing or if the storm had reached them. A wall of rock rose over them as the rain morphed into sheets of sleet. Then darkness. And quiet. Then the storm hit. Wind and rain battered the sides of their shelter, shaking the walls. Or was that Carice trembling? She shivered, soaked to the bone by the rain, and wrapped her cloak tighter around herself. The horses whinnied anxiously, both from the small confines of the shelter and the terror of the storm. Thunder rolled over them, and through the small gaps between the walls, flashes of lightning lit up the dome as they crashed against the earth. That was an excerpt from Voice of Shadows by A.G. Hauser.
That's so mean.
But
it's so necessary.
It is, it's mean, but it's necessary. If there's an easy way out with no consequences, then I'm not doing my job as an entertainer.
Right.
And I'm not doing justice to that character and their story and their personality and their journey.
How far is, like, too far? Like, when do you need to know, like, when is it important to, like, ease up on your characters to let them rest? Or, like, there has to be, like, that balance there. Like, how far do you push, and then when do you, like, let up and let them be, like, okay, we're either going
to
have, like,
sometimes
a moment.
Sometimes it's hard to know. Sometimes, like, I put my characters in situations and I'm like, shit, I don't even know how I'm going to get them out of this.
Right.
But that's, to me, that's good writing.
Right, yeah. Like, you push them up against a corner.
And you're also challenging yourself as, mm-hmm. as the creator and as the story crafter. There's growth and change and there's growth and challenge.
Yeah.
And that's no different for the characters and the situations that I put them in. If I just, you know, stick them in a room and I say, read a book.
Right.
No one wants to read a book about someone reading a book.
Right. They want to read.
They want to, like, suddenly, somebody just came out of this book.
Right. Well, I think,
and they're holding a sword.
Right. Well, I think we read stories to encapsulate some of those qualities ourselves, you know? So it's just, we want to read about people who are being, like, brave and bold because it makes it seem like, okay, maybe we can do that.
Yeah.
Here.
We can envision ourselves in those positions. Mm-hmm. I think that is important because as mere humans, we do still face very difficult challenges. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we're in situations where we've painted ourselves into a corner and we're not really sure how to get out of it. And being able to put ourselves in visualize ourselves in that character's shoes of what would I do in this situation? Like we were discussing earlier, sometimes characters do things of their own accord and they put themselves in situations that I'm like, how did you get here?
Right.
And how am I supposed to get you out of this?
Well, I feel like, you know, humans do that too. Like, whoever did make us, I think they sometimes look at us and be like, how did you get here?
Like, okay. when you have, like a kid or, like, a toddler or, like, a puppy, and they've somehow wound themselves into a situation that they cannot get out of themselves.
Yeah, it's like, why?
What?
But, like, I mean, that's where your growth comes through.
How can we personally harness main character energy
in your story? Like, oftentimes we can feel like the side character, or like things are just happening to us as opposed to we are allowing things to happen to us.
It's happening for me, not to me.
Right. Kind of thing. And we have to, obviously there are things out of our control, but for the most part, you are in control of the things that happen to you and the things that you do. Maybe you're not in control of the way that you feel, but you're in control of the way that you react to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think just remembering you're the main character and you make the rules and you get to say, okay, no, I'm doing this, as opposed to this is happening to me. What the hell do I do?
Right.
Kind of thing.
Have you ever seen The Holiday with, like, okay.
Many times.
Right. It's a good one. But you know that scene with Kate Winslet and she's in the restaurant with Arthur, that, like, older gentleman that was, like, the screenwriter? I love what he says to her. And she's like, Arthur, you told me more than, like, so many years with my therapist. It's a breakthrough. But basically he's like, leading ladies, and then there's the best friend. Like, why are you acting like the best friend when you should be acting like the leading lady?
Absolutely.
And I feel like, you know, not just women need to hear that. Men need to hear that, too. Everyone needs to hear that. Of just, yes, you know, in some stories, we are the best friend. We are the supporting character.
Right.
But we shouldn't be acting that way within our own storyline.
Correct.
So are we the main character within our own story? And if not, why?
Well, and that's so interesting, too, about human beings and how versatile they are.
Because
in the same situation, you can both be the best friend and the leading lady.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're the leading lady of your own story, but perhaps your story, you know, coexists with your best friend's story. And you have to both... You have to be both.
I don't mind being the supporting character in, like, your story.
The leading lady has to have a supporting character.
Right. We all...
Otherwise, like, it's boring.
Yeah. So it's just, like, we have to find a way in order to be, like, comfortable with being, like, okay, we're going to be a good supporting character. Like, what kind of supporting character are we going to be in other people's stories? And then what kind of main character are we going to be in our own story?
Do you think there's a way to use world building as a manifestation technique?
Yeah, I think there is. And I think that we can kind of tie back to what we were talking about earlier with visualization and visualizing the things that you want out of life, but not just visualizing, like, the end goal. You have to also visualize each step to reaching that goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's probably part of manifestation. It's not just saying, I want this. It's, how can I get this? Then how can I get this? Then how can I get this?
Yeah.
Like, giving yourselves actionable steps to achieving that manifestation.
So, like, maybe it's like if you pretend to yourself like you're a main character in a book, and let's say, like, your main plot point is, like, this goal in, like, personal health or whatever, a fitness goal or reading a summer list. It doesn't have to be like anything strenuous. It can be like running a mile. If you're not a good runner, I'm a horrible runner.
I don't know.
I can't. But if I can think myself as like a main character who's trying to get into running and creating like kind of what is a world that I'm living in? Like, what does the world look like where I'm actually like identify as a runner? Maybe I research running. Like, do you think that that would help me with my goal of, you know, running?
And, you know, even a main character isn't just miraculously good at something or miraculously reaches their goal. They have to actively work toward that goal. And so I think picturing yourself as that main character and what a main character would do in that situation to get to that goal is how we can relate world building to manifestation, to reaching the end goal.
In Law of Attraction too, I think it's interesting. Like, well, the more that you feed energy into something, it's the universe is going to throw it back. It's kind of like targeted ads in that way, the way that like ads are paying attention to like maybe what you're saying and like what you're looking at, and they're like, you seem like a person that would like a Kindle. Like, you should buy this. I think the universe is kind of the same way. It's paying attention to, like, what we are saying, like, what we're feeding energy into. And it's kind of trying to sell us, like, maybe this would be an interesting human experience for you.
Yeah.
Like, so I think that if you're playing into that mode of, like, magic and fantasy, but you're still applying those, like, well, let's say, like, let's talk about, like, your Taurus Gemini cusp. If we were to apply that same logic, you know, if we're kind of having that more airy approach to it, or we're grounding it with that kind of like earth element, maybe this is a way that we can create new goals and new scenarios in our life without, I don't know, just without taking it too seriously, but still accomplishing the goal.
Well, I think that that is important to be noted as well, is that you can't take it too seriously. If you're taking it too seriously, it takes all the fun out of it. It takes the growth out of it, if you ask me. Like, if it becomes a chore, if it becomes a struggle, but too much of a struggle, like too much to bear, then you're taking all of the growth and fun out of it. But if you're looking at it, if you're looking at it, like you said, from the Taurus Gemini cusp, like you're grounded in the goal, but you leave yourself more open and more airy to how you get there, you might make it more fun and more achievable that way.
Yeah, I love that. Where are you in your story as a main character right now? Like, what are you learning?
That's such a good question. I feel like I'm learning something new every day.
Right.
I'm learning that I have to have me personally, as a person, I have to have discipline to meet my goals. Like, I can't just be like, oh, it'll come when it comes. I'll never get there.
Right.
I have to make actionable goals. I have to set myself deadlines, kind of thing. That's something that I've learned about myself through my author career, is I have to make it actionable. Or I will just keep dreaming about it.
Yeah, so the motive for you as a character is that you want to be, you know, a full-time author. And then, you know, the steps to take there is learning more, you know, self-discipline and showing up. And that's just kind of a story of its own.
Right.
Where can people connect with you and buy your book?
Book 3 under A.G. Hauser in the Kingdom of Voices series will be out later this year.
Cool.
And then Raining on Heaven, which is the contemporary YA under the Amanda Foote pen name, will be re-releasing here in the next couple of months. And you can find me at aghauserbooks.com or on Instagram at aghauserbooks. Or if you're interested in my contemporary YA pen name, you can find me at amandafoote.com. FOOTE.com.
And of course, we will have all this information also available in the show notes. Thank you so much. Do you have anything else to say or to add? Or
don't forget that you're the main character in your own story.
Thank you so much to A.G. Hauser, Amanda, for coming on the Fairy Ring and talking to us about world building and the magic of literature, and just sharing these beautiful books that you've created. If you are interested in getting your own copy of Voice of Darkness or Voice of Shadows from the Kingdom of Voices series, that link will be available in the show notes, as well as how to connect with A.G. Hauser, Amanda, on her socials. If you liked this episode of The Fairy Ring, please show your support by sharing this episode or leaving the podcast a review. It really does help expand its reach. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, I'm wishing you the world.